This is the Insulin podcast, where I, Owen Costello, try to redefine diabetes. In this week's episode...
I think she got me into the bathroom for some reason, I don't know, but she was trying to get Lucas out of me, and if she wasn't beside me that night, I would have died.
But before we get into that, everything you hear on the Insulin podcast is from my own personal experience. And if you have any worries or issues regarding your diabetes, please contact a medical professional. Now, let's get stuck into this episode. What is happening? Welcome back to the Insulin podcast. And as always, thank you for joining me for another episode. I hope you had an amazing break over the festive period. I hope you've had an unreal new year, and I hope you're all set for 2022, whatever that might bring for you. I hope you're feeling excited going into the new year, as excited as I am, because I like to keep myself as excited as possible. So this week, the guest that I have is Mr. Dermot Ryle. He has been living with type 1 diabetes for over 27 years, and he was diagnosed at the age of 6. He has a very touching and interesting theory around how and why he was originally diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which he gets into in more detail in the episode. Dermot is from Kilkenny, well, just outside Kilkenny City. And for anyone who doesn't know where that is geographically in Ireland, it is southeast of the country. Really nice spot. Highly recommend going if you haven't been. Dermot is a dairy farmer and an AI technician, and he talks about his experiences as a child living with type 1 diabetes, his experience working on the farm, dealing with lows, drinking alcohol, and much, much more. I will tell you in advance, there may be a few curse words. This is a family show, so I'm putting an imaginary parental advisory sticker on this episode just to warn you in advance. So please enjoy this chat with Dermot. So look, Dermot, again, like I said to you, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate you taking the time. And I really appreciate you taking the time knowing that you have COVID right now. So how would you rate yourself out of 10 in terms of how you're feeling right now? 10 being, I'm feeling great.
I'd say about 6, 7, you know. My appetite isn't great. And I'm still able to work, which I'm very glad for, but I'm just not feeling great, just kind of a little bit run down. But then again, if COVID wasn't around and I was feeling I'd just be saying I have a bit of a head cold, but the voice is kind of, the throat is a little bit off a bit. And I was walking around the field there yesterday and I thought I was a little bit more out of breath than I should be, but maybe a little bit paranoid about it too. Like, you know, maybe I should just get on with it. Like, you know, and I feel fine and it doesn't affect the blood sugars. So that's a major thing. I know you were saying it did affect your blood sugars, but I think with the new Omicron, I don't think... I'm a little bit glad that it doesn't affect me that much. And if it was a massive infection that I had inside me, that it would affect the blood sugars, and it's not affecting the blood sugars. So I'm okay.
Well, that's good. Happy to hear it. And even just that you mentioned that, so different to my experience. I know I had it back in October, but in terms of like how I felt physically, I actually felt grand. I felt fine. But my blood sugars were a nightmare.
Yeah.
And even like, I still am under the impression that my bloods aren't fully back to the way they were. My insulin to carb ratio had changed. My basal rates had changed. So it was just like, I was managing my diabetes each day completely blind, because it was almost just a guessing game. Cause I felt as if it was changing each day. And have you noticed that at all?
Not with this. I had before when I was sick with, you know, you'd come down with the flu or whatever had happened with you. It would spike any part of the daytime for no reason. It is not as frustrating as when it happens, when it spikes like that for no reason. And but with this, I have to admit I'm fine. You know, the only problem I have is that I can't. go into anyone or talk to anyone and have to, you know, stay away. But I, compared to what I know anyone else is going through, I'm very lucky. I'm out in the country. I can walk outside. I can do my jobs down the yard. There's no one around. No one can come near me. So, you know, I am lucky that way. But I failed two antigen tests. I'm waiting for a PCR. I don't know, should I even go for a PCR? But I ran about anyway. So hopefully I'll get that. And, you know, but sure, I know I have it. Just stay away from everyone, I suppose.
Well, look, Lisa, I'm giving you company right now. We can chat. We can chat today.
Yeah. To have it at this time of the year, for me personally, anyway, work-wise, it's very quiet at this time of the year. So I do have time. So it's nice to, I wouldn't have that much work to do every day. But when it comes to February, March, April, May, I've been very, very busy.
So how will that ramp up for you then come February in terms of work?
Well, I'm a dairy farmer, so the cows will calf, I suppose, the next 3 weeks, and then that's when, you know, you'd be getting up at 4 o'clock in the night time, maybe to calf a cow, and then you mightn't go back to bed, you might just stay up, then milk the rest of the cows, and then you're scraping cubicles, you're bedding calves, and you're tagging calves, and dehorning calves, you're cleaning out cow pens, and it's just very, very physically draining. And then you come up to the house then to eat something and you need to chew the corner off the table. You'd be so hungry and tired, you know. And then you go back down again and I'd lose a lot of weight during the calving season. But then it would ease off a bit maybe then, and some calves then you want to sell on, you bring them into the market, and the work kind of eases off a bit, and the days get a bit longer and the weather gets better and cows can go out and grass then, and it eases a little bit. But I'm an AI technician, so I artificially assimilate cows for other farmers. So I have a pot and it's full of liquid nitrogen and these little straws, and I get their cows and calf, and that's a very intense work from maybe the middle of April to the 1st of June. It kind of drags on a little bit then into July, August, but that's basically what I do.
So you're a busy man, in the sounds of it.
Yeah, it'd be very, intense work. So you'd have to have yourself right. Blood sugars, you know, they do go low sometimes. Do have to treat them, you know. It's heavy going, yeah. It's heavy going. It's physically draining work. So you could be fine for, just say, now, and then you could be doing something very strenuous, and in a half an hour time, you could have low blood sugars, and, you know, bang, straight away, you got to sort of those.
Have you found that when you're doing so much more physical work around the farm, you're obviously having a lot more lows because you're moving around so much and you're doing so much of that physical work?
Definitely.
Do you find as though, does your diabetes ever kind of get in the way of that because you're moving around so much, you're doing so much physical work, inevitably probably leading to more low blood sugars?
It does, yeah. I mean, it's very easy for the diabetic nurses to say reduce the basal when you're doing high activity, but it's when you're kind of doing a job, I suppose, some days it's very strenuous, other days it might be that bad. It's whatever kind of comes in front of you. So it's very difficult. It's easy to say, oh, if you're doing a lot of work, reduce the basal rate for that day, you know, but it's, you don't know what that day is going to be. You know, I could have a day where, you know, there could be, and I could have to lift two or three baby calves from the end of a shed in a wheelbarrow, and the baby calf is trying to get up and follow the wheelbarrow and covered in muck and shite, and you have to pick her up and pour back into the wheelbarrow, bring her up to the shed and then give her the beast and the first milk. And, you know, you have to do all those things. It's just really heavy. And that 20, 30 minutes of lifting and dragging and pulling would knock you back from blood sugars of 7 or 8 to 2.8. It could just knock you back so far. That's that physical work. You know, it could knock you back that much. And you wouldn't realize you have to do it until you walk into the shed and you see it in the corner, you know. So at that time of the year, I just kind of have Lucozil bottles around, you know, and I just, if I get the low blood sugars, I drink half a bottle and 5 minutes or so and back again. That's basically it.
Mm. So is there anything that you do, I suppose, differently around that time of year when you know you're going to be super busy on the farm?
I would have reduced the basal race coming into it. You know, I'd say my average basal rate would be maybe 0.55 now or something like that. But, you know, I would go down to 0.30. That would be the way. Or that's the way I look at it anyway, my own point of view. But I wouldn't... I'd have a good breakfast in the morning time. And that'd be the one thing I would. It'd be ready break. I'd always have porridge. And during the daytime then, maybe about, I'd be working right up to 2 or 3 o'clock. You know, and I come inside, I'd be absolutely starving. I shouldn't be coming in 2 or 3 o'clock. I should be coming in around, if I had a breakfast at 8 o'clock, I should be coming in at 12 o'clock, half 12 for some tweets. I don't. I'll come in at half 2, 3 o'clock maybe. That's wrong, but I do it anyway. And I'd eat something. Then I might come in then around 8, half 8. This is during the intense period of time. Mm. And I'd come in then, I'd eat something again. And I'd have the camera on my phone. The cow was going to calf. And next thing, she'd be about to calf and I'd go back down again. But most nights I'd be so bloody tired, I'd fall asleep and I wouldn't be able to wake up. And I'd walk down to the shed. I'd look at the camera and the phone, dreading what's going to happen. And there's the cow and the calf and they're both fine. That's after happening so many times to me. I've been blessed with luck, definitely blessed with luck.
So how many cows and calves at a time could you potentially be needing to look after? Because it sounds as if you're looking at your camera on your phone when you go to bed. It's like a newborn baby in the house having to constantly monitor it.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have, I'd have a small number of cows compared to the other farmers around. Like I'd only have 50 cows, calving down 50 cows. So I'd have the AI job as well. So that's a big help. But you know, most farmers around me here in this area anyway would have 100 plus cows, 120, 130, and they have help every year. And they have to. If you had that number, they'd have their fathers there to help them, and they'd have paid workers there. But I just try and kind of do as much as I can on my own. And if maybe it was under a little bit of pressure, maybe on a Saturday, I might have a young lad there that might, you know, clean out a shed or something like that. But I kind of do most of it myself. So that'd be the thing. You'd have to look after yourself. Obviously, you know yourself, you know, checking the blood sugars, keeping them right. Because if you're not feeling right, you can't do anything. And simple as that, like, you just can't do anything.
I think that's a big part of, I suppose, being involved in physical work is the idea of, I'm not just sitting at a desk all day. I can't always be constantly looking at my blood sugar or monitoring my blood sugar as I might like to. And sometimes, obviously, if you're doing all that physical work, your bloods are going to be a lot more inclined to drop. And it's funny, it reminds me of, I'm not now in any way comparing this to working on a farm, but when I'm going to train or when I'm doing exercise, because I know that I'm going to train or do exercise, I can kind of preempt those highs or lows and make an adjustment prior to it. Whereas the example that I always think of is anytime I clean my car, now I don't do it probably regularly enough, but anytime I clean my car, I'm still moving around. I'm still being active. And sometimes that movement and activity leads me to having a low blood sugar because I haven't necessarily treated it as quote unquote exercise and made the necessary adjustments prior to it. Would that be similar to you on the farm?
It would. I mean, I know you go to the gym a lot yourself, and a lot of people do. But like, I mean, if you have to pick up a 70 kilo calf over your shoulder at the end of a shed and walk it for maybe 100 yards, another cow is poking off you and her mother poking you up the backside while you're taking away my baby calf. Maybe that's as good as a session in the gym. I don't know, but it certainly takes it out of you. And you don't expect it either, these things. If you're going to the gym, let's say for 7 o'clock, you know what's going to happen. You know you're going to, but some these days are different on a farm. And I'm not saying that I'm as busy as all the other farmers because I wouldn't have the number of cows that they'd have. But it would be busy some days, and some days it mightn't be that busy, and then other days you could be lifting and pulling and dragging for the whole day, and it hits you, and like you would get a bad law, you know. You'd have to have the looks already, you'd have to be checking it, you know, you have to be checking the blood sugars. But you know, sometimes I should be checking it more, but I'd be working, you know, and you know yourself when you're in the middle of something, you kind of want to keep going, and you know, I'd be lucky enough myself, though I'd be able to cop the lows pretty quickly, you know, because I'd be slowing down, spraining or scraping or whatever I'd be doing, I'd be just a little bit slower, and my concentration would be bad. That's one thing I would notice with it. My concentration would be very, very bad, and I'd know then something's up. But the danger is that your blood sugars could go down so fast that you don't even realize you're low and you're going around the place. You don't know what you're at. You don't even know you have low blood sugars. That happened to me a few times over the years, and it's very, very dangerous. So I'd like to think I got a lid in that now, but that'd be the dangerous thing, really. Just if your blood sugars went down really, really fast and you didn't even realize that you were, you did have low blood sugars and you didn't know what was going on, where you were. You know, I think that's what happens to people who maybe get into accidents if they have a diabetic low.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what can be tricky with that, and even just lows themselves, is how there's a very thin line between being perfectly in range and then being low. And because there's such a thin line between the two, it can happen so quickly. And there's a very, very short space of time in which our bloods can have that drop. And the difference to it would be if your bloods go high and your bloods stay high, you can function a bit more for a bit longer, in my opinion. Whereas with a low blood sugar, it's just kind of like a brick hits you in the head, you know, and you're physically and mentally gone at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Physically and mentally, but the dangerous part is just mentally. Like you just, and I think it's more, you'd be so worried and you'd be thinking, I can't do this, I can't do that, what am I going to do? And you'd be freaking out. And next thing you just drink a bit of Lucozade, and 5 minutes later you're like, well, it's not a big deal. Great to do that. You know, it's scary in a way, like, but there's no point in saying, people saying, you know, look after yourself and do this and do that, like, but no matter how well you look after yourself, you're going to get low blood sugars. You're going to have to be able to treat yourself. And sometimes it could hit someone that they have a low blood sugar and they're not able to treat themselves. And that's a reality that everyone will have to, that has diabetes, that'll have to accept that they'll need help from someone else and need people around them to know, because I was very bullheaded myself when I was younger. I said, no, I'm fine and grand, but I did need help. That someone did have to step in and help me, or, you know, I would have been in big trouble.
Yeah, there was a time or an incident that you had mentioned in one of the emails that you sent us. And I think it was after a night you had been out drinking, or you had been asleep and had a low, and your girlfriend had to essentially save you. What were the circumstances around that?
Well, I was out. I was out. My girlfriend then is my wife now, so I'm going to clear that up first.
Cool.
And we're out in a pub anyway, and a nightclub, whatever, was with her, and I just wasn't feeling right. I had high blood sugars all night, and I kept, as what you said before, I panicked. I was giving myself insulin and it wasn't working. I don't know how many units I gave, maybe 6 or 7 units, and it wasn't coming down. I think the blood sugar was something like 18, 20, 21. They weren't coming down. I was feeling terrible. I was drinking, but I wasn't really drinking. I was just kind of slobbering, kind of wasn't drunk, but just kind of sick. And I went home that night. Fine. You know, just went to bed. And after that, then it was just a blur. But basically, she woke up beside me and I was struggling to breathe. I was struggling to breathe. And I kind of, I had no clue what was going on. And she lifted me up and I think she got me out of the bed. I don't know how to this day she lifted me out of the bed because I'm 6'4". And but she did, and she was getting Lucozade in me, and I know I think she got me into the bathroom for some reason, I don't know, but she was trying to get Lucozade in me, and looking back on it now, she should have called an ambulance. But I had said to her, if I ever get like that, don't ever call an ambulance, just give me a bottle of Lucozade, don't ever call an ambulance. And it was the stupidest thing I'd say I've ever said, because if you're that bad, you call an ambulance. And she was trying to give me a bottle of Lucozade. She was trying to open up my mouth and she was pouring it in. And I even remember the sensation of the cold Lucozade going down my face. I wasn't able to swallow it. I remember the coldness going down by the side of my jaw, going down. And I was getting some in. She was getting some in, and next thing I kind of was kind of half coming around, and I asked her, I said to her, what's happening? I said, what are you doing here? She goes, you have a low on treatment. And why am I here? Why am I in this room? And this is the shite I was coming out with. And then I kind of, my jaw was able to open up a little bit, and I was able to drink the Lucozade myself, kind of slurring, lifting up, drinking a little bit, lifting up, drinking a little bit. Then I kind of came around, and that was it. Stayed up for a while after that, went to bed. But if she wasn't beside me that night, I would have died, 100%. I was struggling to breathe. I didn't know where I was, know what I was doing. I would have died. She saved my life, you know, and I don't really think about that much. I thanked her for our race, but I don't really think about it that much, because, you know, it just happened. And no matter how well you look after yourself, it could happen to any of us, you know, it could. And it was just drinking, and I would have woke up, only I had a few drinks in me and I was just in that bit of a dead sleep, and I panicked. I couldn't get the blood sugars down. They wouldn't come down. I kept feeding myself insulin. It wouldn't come down. And sure, lo and behold, 2 or 3 hours later, they all hit me like a ton of bricks. And I went down. I got too bad a low. So that's something that I'd never do now. At high blood sugars, waste. Give yourself the insulin, waste. If it doesn't come down, you know, waste. Then maybe treat it again. But wait, give it time. Give the insulin, give it time. And it will come down, you know.
Yeah, a big part of treating our high blood sugars, in my opinion, is just having that patience with our insulin. And
yes,
oftentimes, including myself over the years, you can be under the impression that our rapid acting or fast acting insulin should be a lot faster than it is. And even from my own experience, you could have a pretty stubborn blood sugar, and you can treat it, and you could be waiting a while for it to come down. And while you're waiting for it to come down, if you check again, you can be in the mindset of, oh, will I take more insulin? Will I take more insulin? Will I take more insulin? Yeah. And then what can happen is it can all, like you say, hit you at once and you can go down like a ton of bricks.
I mean, I didn't tell anyone about that. So it was just myself and my wife that know about that. I think we told two close friends jokingly one night. I made a laugh off it. Like, but I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell my mother this. I didn't tell my sister, my two brothers over it. I didn't tell any of my close friends really over it. I'm sure I told you and 30,000 listeners, so I might as well tell them pretty soon.
What better way?
Yeah.
So do you feel then, Dermot, it was a combination of the fact that you had been out and you were drinking and the drinking had probably caused you to be high? And then were you kind of rushing to get your bloods back down?
No, well, because I was out with my girlfriend then at the time, so I wasn't drinking hard because, you know, if I was with the other lads, maybe it would have been a different story. But I was kind of taking it handy because probably I was with her. And I just was, you know, I think it happens to everyone where your blood sugars are just high for, I don't think you know the reason. And maybe there is a reason, but you don't know. And they were just high. And I was giving myself insulin and they just weren't going down. And then maybe, then obviously the drink, I was drinking, but wasn't drinking hard, you know, but I was still drunk. Like, you know, I was still having a few. And I'd say me being getting a little bit drunk, I was a bit quicker on giving myself a bolus. I didn't have much patience anymore. And maybe that was the cause of it. But this was about 7-8 years ago. This happened, you know, about 7-8 years ago. I'll always remember it, you know, because it does stick out. It happened, sure. It was a near-death experience.
Do you think that changed anything for you in terms of how you view your diabetes, how you manage your diabetes?
Yeah, I think everyone gets, I'm sorry, there's someone at the door here. Do you mind?
You're fine. Take your time.
Yeah. Just sorry.
I'll keep you all entertained while Dermot's gone to the door to answer whoever's at the door. So yeah, I suppose my main takeaway from that, even just listening to the story now, is how you should always be patient when you're correcting the high. And I've kind of caught myself in a bit of trouble before too, where my bloods are stubborn. And we've all had those blood sugars where they're high and they're higher than we want, obviously. And they just won't come down for a while. And we're very quick to take more insulin because we think, oh, if I take this insulin, it should bring it down. And oftentimes, like Dermot said, it hits you like a ton of bricks and then you just crash. And that's obviously how he got himself into that spot of trouble there on top of drinking. So be very mindful, very careful. You're back, Dermot. I was keeping our listener entertained and telling them about my main takeaway from your story so far.
Oh, right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So I was asking you, do you feel that experience had changed your mentality around your diabetes or even how you manage your diabetes day to day?
Yeah, it was a scare. And I think anyone that's a diabetic would know every now and again you'll get a scare. And it'll remind you this is a serious illness that you have. And I think that was the scare I got. I think everyone gets a scare every now and again and they just go like, I remember I was looking at this program. It was out in 2015. This sh- no, this is where part of the podcast, maybe you can get shut out. Maybe I'm trying to think of this kitchen, Nightmare Kitchens, or Mikel something was the chef, and he wanted to get lads with disabilities, people with disabilities, to cook. You want to say someone that maybe would be blind, or someone that might have Down syndrome or something, and he wanted to get them in the kitchen and cook and serve, that they can do it as much as anyone else can do it, which, you know, he's great. But there was this lad, he was 19 and he was blind, and he had the very same way about himself as I was. He walked around the same way, talked the same way, same, he was tall and thin like me, and they said he was blind because of diabetic retinopathy. No, I didn't say that right. Retinotomy, I think it's called.
Retinopathy.
Retinotomy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You can cut that bit out as well. It's stupid. Yeah, and he got that. And he looked really healthy, but he was blind. And if you saw him trying to cut up the vegetables, and he blind, and he was from poor diabetic management. And it really opened my eyes. Well, to see, I was lucky that I could see first off, but to see that, I said to myself, you know, I was always, bar a couple of years in my teenage years, I always kind of kept a close lid on it, kept an eye on it. If it was going a little bit the wrong way, I'd bring it back, definitely, because you have to, because you'll get a scare. Something will happen, you'll get a scare. If you'll hear someone that has diabetes for so many years, and they had part of their, they had a toe amputated, then you'll hear something that'll scare you. You'll hear someone that is in hospital and they're struggling to breathe, something happened, they're diabetic, poor management, you'll hear something that'll scare you. You know, and that'll just kind of keep you going, keep you doing right, you know.
Mm. Yeah, I think what can be difficult sometimes about living with type 1 is the idea of the fact that it's so constant. Even right now, the two of us are speaking to each other on the podcast, but I know in the back of my head, I'm thinking, what are my blood sugars at? And you probably are too.
Yeah.
And sometimes, because it's such a constant, and because we always have to kind of have our diabetic hat on, to use that expression, that can sometimes lead to complacency. And if it leads to complacency with our own management, and we think, look, I'll be fine, it's fine, you're kind of drawn back into the reality of it quite quickly when you hear about these sort of horror stories, you know. And I suppose horror stories might not be the best way to put it, but for lack of a better word, the stories that remind us of how serious potentially it can be. That was part one of my chat with Dermot. As you know, as always, if you are listening on the day of the release, part two will be out tomorrow. But if you're listening on any other day, part two is going to be the next episode on our list. So enjoy that. Thanks for listening to part one. Chat to you soon.